Hi, and welcome to The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's Opinion Page podcast. I'm Sarah Garrett Gasson, the Opinion Page editor, and I'm here with David Fitzsimmons.
Hello.
Our columnist and cartoonist, and Edward Celaya, our opinion writer.
Hey, how's it going?
And he is also the producer of this fine podcast, which we hope you enjoy. So the big news that is coming out of TUSD, because there's always something coming out of the Tucson Unified School District, is the ongoing saga and controversy over their proposed family life curriculum, in which they dare to talk about how people aren't all the same, how consent is something that we should be talking about and kids should be learning about, that good decision making is a thing, and, you know, medically accurate information about people and gender identity and sexual orientation and all of that.
You summarized that very well, I thought.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
More or less information,
you know,
for the year 2019.
Yeah. And so there have been a lot of opponents. We can point out that many of those opponents are not from within the Tucson Unified School District. They don't have kids in the Unified School District, Tucson Unified School District. And even if they did, they could opt out and not have their kids exposed to apparently ungodly, medically accurate information. You can probably tell where I stand on this issue. So, Edward, what do you think?
Oh, wow. So I think that obviously the opposition around this is overblown, inaccurate, and just wrong. Obviously, in an ideal world, parents would have all of this information and be able to impart it to their children. We don't live in that ideal world. And in this world that we live in, public schools take on this mantle to help educate and inform students of what is medically and scientifically accurate. To me, there is nothing in here that's opposable. It sounds like they're just trying to make better citizens and more informed young adults that can walk among us.
Yeah, I agree. It just sounds like they just simply want to prevent disease and misery.
Yeah.
That's a very bold goal.
That's not what it says in my Bible.
That's right, son. You know, whenever we talk about education, I always immediately conjure up a very romantic view of the classroom. You know, I picture the best teacher in the world, and every student is engaged. But when this issue came up, my first thought was an acquaintance of mine who was a middle school health teacher, and she had to teach sex ed. And one occasion, I was visiting with her. Hey, how's it going? She said, "Ah, the district cannot pay me enough to say the word penis in front of 13-year-old boys ever again." That's probably the truth of those classes. You know, I'm trying to be sympathetic as well towards the critics. It's kind of a struggle. I'm trying to think, okay, what motivates this? Somehow, from my complete ignorance of what motivates it, I imagine that maybe a couple of local preachers, you know.
Ooh.
It's kind of boring out there in the pews, and we got to do something to get a little excitement going. We got to do something together. Let's cancel that picnic this weekend, and instead, let's go down to TUSD and give them what for.
Well, there are several congregations, and if you look at the flyers that are being passed out, there are Christian and evangelical organizations that are part of this, like For Tucson. I had some folks who were speaking up against this. And the thing that I don't understand, well, I can understand why someone who has a kid in TUSD would, you know, might object. If you don't think that this is appropriate for your kid to know, you want to deal with it at home, more power to you. You are entirely able to do that.
And you have an avenue in which you can do that.
Right.
And one of the speakers, a young woman who I think was named Genesis, and
yes,
I'm not recalling her last name, but she stood up to speak and talking about, you know, the role of parents in doing this, and mentioned that her parents kept her out of the sex ed and family life curriculum in middle school because they thought that it was not appropriate for the school to be teaching that, that it was something they wanted to do at home. And I just thought that is the case study for how this should operate.
Exactly.
It mm-hmm. was her family made a decision. They took care of things the way they saw fit. And I don't understand the idea that I'm offended, so you shouldn't be able to do something.
Ah, good point.
Yeah, it's interesting. To me, and I think we've kind of talked about it a little before, what is interesting to me is you always hear, whether it's a science curriculum or sex ed, you always hear the, this is a violation of my faith. What's a little different in that you're hearing from some of the opponents here in this argument is this is in opposition to my culture. And the culture that they are alluding to is Hispanic culture. And I think the reason for this is twofold that they're bringing this up. Number one, I think that it is that they're sophisticated enough to realize that the world that we live in today is a little bit more liberal societal-wise, right. And that bringing the faith, making faith the number one sort of argument here, yeah. would probably bring unwelcome scrutiny back to their congregations at home. And so bringing it up more as a culture thing kind of gives them a little bit of something to hide behind. Number two, I think what it does is it kind of sends a message to TUSD, to the board, in mm-hmm. number one, that, hey, we're Hispanics. We're the bread and butter of this district. Yeah. We're, I believe it's 63% identify as Hispanic in the district. One of the speakers got up and basically said, if this were to go through, we will pull our kids out of the district. I think that using the Hispanic culture here is number one to run interference so that it's not, we're not having to look at some of these faiths that are preaching some of these, why these people are opposing it. And number two, I think it's to send the message to TUSD that if you were to do this, you're going to get big backlash.
That's
from,
very interesting. I got to admit, you know, as a pasty white liberal, I might hesitate to be critical because I wouldn't want to be accused of racism.
That's the tough part.
That's my
too.
Silly.
That's why I think that it's hard for some of the board to like. Oh well, wait a minute here. Yeah. This is do we really want to mess around with people who are claiming to be the majority of
Yeah.
of our students.
I love this subject as the father of three. I never wanted to have the talk. There is nothing more miserable or painful than having. Did you ever have the talk with your, did your parents Ooh. Ever sit either of you down and have a talk?
I think that's where we're going to go a little
bit.
Yeah,
there was a book that was left on my bed when I don't know, fifth grade, however, fourth or fifth grade. And it was like,
Lady Chatterley's Lover.
I didn't read that till college. No, it was like your body is changing, or you know, one of those sort of what's going on mm-hmm. with your
parts.
Puberty. But no, I do not remember having any sort of talk. Mm-hmm. I do remember my mom saying, "If you're gay, that's fine." Mm-hmm. But I don't remember anything. And I think my brother mentioned my dad trying to have like the talk. And I can only imagine how that went.
For me, it was a little weird. It came in kind of two stages. In junior high, my parents signed up through our church. We went to a Catholic church, some sort of event where me and my dad, everybody else stayed up in Casa Grande. We came down to Tucson. There was a meeting of like 10 or 12 dads and their sons. And while ostensibly it was about sex ed, they tried to kind of dress it up so that it was more about decision making. And you're an investigator. There were still, you know, teaching you about the penis and the vagina, a little bit of that. But in between that were like, detective little really? Drills that we would do.
Edward, what are you doing in there? Edward, I'm investigating. Okay.
But yeah, so for me, I think to that point that Genesis was bringing up, ideally it would be your parents that do teach you this, but at school, because we did not have real sex ed, especially in junior high and elementary school, a lot of what I would consider, you know, my sex ed was from those other students around me who were like, hey, you know, you just put your pee-pee in the vajayjay. And
that's right.
That's where
the Bureau of Misinformation.
Exactly. And we, in that time, used gay as a derogative.
Yeah.
Even though we had no understanding of what it actually meant to be gay, all it meant to us at that time was things were bad. That's a bad thing. And that's the sort of, I think, with when you don't have comprehensive curriculums like the family life one, that's the danger you run, is that raising children who, while they might be educated in math and science, have no idea
That's it for the Daily Double, because I'm thinking, you know, I love the fact that your religion will drive you to a TUSD meeting to discuss this issue, but unless your kid is Amish and they don't have access to a computer and they've never once thought of Googling the word sex, forget it. My role as a parent, honestly, with my three kids, was to attempt to save their lives and give them health advice. But I wouldn't do it in a direct fashion. It would be, you know, just walking through the living room. Hey, by the way, hey, ever put a condom on banana? Listen, I got to go run. Great talk. Okay, fun talking to you. My daughter, when she was 30, she said, Dad, do you remember when we had that talk? You took me out for a cup of coffee, and I wasn't drinking coffee yet. I was like six. I hated the coffee. Yeah. And then you told me way too much information about yourself. Like, I don't understand what that was about. But, you know, I thought it was really sweet, but I was humoring you. What? Oh, yeah, I've been sexually active for years. I share that story with every parent who brags about their perfect child, because my daughter was a nerd. I would pick her up at the library every day. When I heard her anecdote, I thought, where on the roof in an arroyo? I know it was that construction crew down the street. So, you know, I love this conversation, but wow, it's quite a drift from reality and the real world we live in.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And if you look at I looked at some of the like Family Watch International, I think was one of some of the groups that were part of the opposition. There's this whole like other dimension sort of campaign going on against comprehensive sex education, where it's just outright wrong, inaccurate, not factual about what the curriculum actually involves. And I think a lot of people are being fueled by these just wrong notions and fear tactics about what kids will be learning and what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is part of what is clouding this conversation. And also, if there are people who say, the LGBTQ and non-binary genders and fluidity and all that stuff, that's not part of our culture. Yes, it is.
Yeah, you're just not maybe aware.
Yeah, you're just not participating in it. So to me, I think a little bit of this rings as a kind of a Trojan horse by folks who...
Trojan horse!
Zing.
Oh.
I'm here all week. By folks who think of public education in totally negative terms, who are totally against the idea of public education to begin with, who would like to see public education go the route of privatization and charter schools. I think that I think there is a hint of that in this as well, especially when you hear the folks that are like, who are you at school to be qualified talking about things that you're an expert on? Like, for real, come on now. Let's think about this a little bit. They're an expert in there. That's why they're teaching. So I think for me, a little bit of this goes back to this total right wing, just kind of get your foot into the door and figure out a way to create doubt in the system.
I gotta admit, I can see their arguments. After my daughter, I decided to raise my both of my sons with biblical sex ed. And I told them, for example, if you discover that your bride on your wedding night is not a virgin, stone her. It's right there in the book.
It is.
So what? How did you learn, David?
How did I learn? Strangely enough, from my mother.
Whoa.
My mother was a very, I guess by some standards one might say, earthy or vulgar person, but she was exceedingly frank. So when I was about age 11, I was terrified to learn the truth. It sounded horrifying to me. You do what? Oh, no!
Ew.
Ew, this sounds horrible. And it was all true that she, strange.
It was all true.
Yeah, so I went to the schoolyard the next day as the reigning expert.
Check it out.
Gather around, boys. Gather around. I got some stories to tell you. You will not believe what you can do with segments of your anatomy. It's incredible.
I do remember a rumor at one point, and I don't remember how old I was, but if you, of course, the classic, if you have sex for the first time, you can't get pregnant.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
So true.
And then also if presumably I'm assuming the woman is wearing high heels, you can't get pregnant.
Oh,
that's good advice.
Wow.
So that's
we need more high heeled women walking around.
Wow.
Damn.
High heel information. Yeah.
Where do these come from?
You know, I got to admit, actually, I think my mother was making up because I believed a lie for years. And I would tell guests in our household this story because when I was about 5 or 6, I found a mysterious box in the closet belonged to my mother that contained a product.
Oh.
And.
I know where this is going.
I believe it was sanitary. But I did not know what they were. Mom, what's this? And she said, honey, those are mouse beds. Mouse beds? Oh, you're the nicest mom ever. Put them right back. Never gave any thought to the fact. I never saw a single mouse in our house. My mom, she's got like storage in case we have guests. In case like 30 mice decide to sleep over.
One of my best friends in middle school, Denise, her younger sister used Maxie Pads as Barbie beds.
Wow!
They are beds.
And my brother, I'm sure he will enjoy the world knowing this.
Oh, man.
Would get into the tampons.
Oh, nice.
Okay. And glue little fins and like
missiles
and turn them into like bombers.
Yes.
It was very inventive. And I remember my mom having to tell him, like, stop using these. I'll get you some of your own.
I'll get you some.
Yeah.
I guess we all needed a little bit of sex there.
Yeah.
A little rough around the edges.
So moving on to probably one of the unsexiest things, the Democratic debate tonight.
Ooh.
We have how many candidates?
Ten tonight.
Yeah.
It's a one night only thing this time.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking forward to it. Or maybe the YouTube segment that's, you know, it's trimmed down to like 30 seconds, the highlights. No, I'll watch the whole thing. What the heck?
So everyone's talking about, you know, it's the first time Biden and Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren will be on the same stage facing
Bernie
off.
Bernie, too. Yeah.
Bernie.
Yeah.
Do you expect any sort of fireworks?
Look, I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's go on Bernie. Yeah. Here we go. Dueling Bernie. Hey, Abby, what do you think?
I'm not sure how Mr. Biden is going to be coming in here. No. I think that... What I'm going to be looking for tonight is how much space is between Biden and the two liberal candidates, the more left-wing candidates, yeah. Bernie and Warren. And on issues of Medicare or, you know, healthcare, on issues of national security, I want to see where the real policy differences are between those three. Because
how weird. To me, be a journalist to care about this policy stuff. What about the personalities?
Don't get me wrong. Personalities are important, especially in this age of the celebrity president. Yeah. You've got to be able to perform on camera. But more than anything, I'm looking for the real differences right now. This is the first time we'll have the real the carrier of the moderate, standard bearer, and the two liberal standard bearers here. Let's find out what are the Democrats really about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing them all attempt to reassure their various bases. Mm. You know, Warren attempting to reassure, well, I guess just about everyone, that she's not scary.
Or a hypocrite.
And Biden attempting to reassure everyone that he's still alive. How old is he? Did I say that?
76.
Biden, that's right.
He's a gaffe machine too.
Yeah, he's a gaffe machine. That makes me so nervous, but... Yeah, so I guess it's going to be he's going to attempt to reassure us that he's capable of standing on the debate stage with Donald Trump and defeating him. And Warren's got to persuade me that she's not scary, as much as I agree with all of her policies.
Do you think that it is effective when the Democratic candidates go after each other? Are they running a risk of beating up on each other during the primary when really... Many Democrats that I've talked to are saying, we just need someone who will defeat Trump. Is there danger there?
I don't know. I'm thinking it's so early that it'll be forgotten. It'll be forgotten by October.
Or will it be decided?
Oh, that would be, I think that'd be wonderful, actually, if it were decided, don't you? I mean, that'd be a surprise, but. Perhaps there'll be a fatal blow of some kind. I don't know what it would be.
See, so I think of this, it's a situational. It's always going to be different candidate to candidate, debate to debate. Yeah. I think in this debate, if you are somebody in the bottom five looking up, if you're a Beto, if you're a Klobuchar, if you're a Mayor Pete, that right now... Drawing a contrast between yourself and Joe Biden or yourself and Elizabeth Warren by going after them is actually probably a pretty good strategy.
Yeah.
If you were a Biden or a Warren, I think punching down does nothing for you at this point. Sure. I think you absorb it. I think that you kind of try and redirect the argument at that point. What I do want to see a little bit more of is the candidates organically kind of going after each other and not so much of, hey, Sarah, did you hear that Fitz said something bad about you, Matt, last night? What do you got to say to that? I don't want to hear any more of that. I don't like the manufactured drama that CNN tried last time. I'd like to see it be a little bit more like
a straight
organic.
Policy. Yep.
Yeah.
I did hear, and I think it was on the media, on NPR, during my drive to the grocery store over the weekend, talking about the various like climate town halls that CNN has had and just how much better the questions are from the quote unquote real people than your standard debate questions have been from CNN and the different hosts. And part of that is exactly right. The such and such said, so-and-so said something bad about you, respond. Or,
no.
Are you a racist? Respond. You know, that sort of stuff that, what are you supposed to say? Why, yes, when they criticize me, they were exactly right.
Why do you think that is? I sort of suspect maybe it's because the journalists are so, there's so much a part of the inside baseball that they sort of lose the bigger picture, and they're just chasing what's hot that hour, which is usually a tweet.
I think part of it is that, and part of it is once you got to try and get some conflict. I think that CNN especially values, hey, this person said that, person from the other side, what do you have to say? That is kind of CNN. If you just watch the two debates that have happened, that is CNN's kind of like go-to. MSNBC was much more like, let me let you talk about whatever it is you'd like to talk about, all 25 of you. But to me, I think it's because they think that there is value in that conflict and that they think there's clicks and eyes that are attracted to that.
So businessman Andrew Yang is going to be there tonight. Marianne Williamson, sadly, did not make the cut.
Oh. Yang has been moving.
The moon must be in a different phase. Oh. But, yeah, what do you think we're going to hear from Andrew Yang? And what do you think the appeal is, other than, hey, I want the $1,000 he's talking about giving me?
I really can't imagine what it is beyond the $1,000, other than it might be fellow techies who have great confidence that a man with his kind of technological insights can resolve some of our more complex issues.
So I've got an interesting little take on Yang. I think that Yang appeals to a segment of the Trump electorate that Bernie has also appealed to, that Bernie bro kind of segment.
Yeah.
Yang has been, and if you followed the polls the last month, Yang has been the big mover. I think he's in the top five right now. I think he's right outside the top four. For me, I think his big appeal is this sort of libertarian-ish but still liberal kind of message that he has. Yeah, I'm going to give you $1,000, but he still talks a little bit about like cutting back on other social safety nets. So to me, I think there's a sort of appeal for him, not necessarily to the right, but more towards the center. But it's not the traditional center that we think of. It's more of this libertarian, I'm going to go at my own, that sort of center. Not necessarily a traditional Joe Biden centrist, if
you will. I think that's a good analysis. I think, if anything, you might have a romantic view of our fellow citizens. That all of our fellow citizens will take this revenue and they'll spend it prudently and wisely. Be good for the economy, and they'll better their lives. And thus, you won't need those social nets.
It's an interesting argument, isn't it?
That
if you give people enough to worry about, you know, their essentials, that they'll be able to worry now about, hey, well, now that I've got that taken care of, maybe I can be a little bit more entrepreneurial in spirit, or maybe I can pursue a degree that I wasn't able to a while back.
I have to give him credit that he's addressing the issue of automation and what it's going to do to the labor force in the United States. He's the first candidate to really talk about that that future that looms for all of us.
Mm-hmm. He's a smart guy. I think he brings something new to the Democrats that we haven't seen probably, I think, in the last, well, I mean, Obama was running it, so definitely in the last 8 years. I'll be interested to see how he does tonight. I like what he has to say. I love $2,000 or excuse me, $1,000 a month. But I still think that when it comes down to it, he's on the outside looking in.
So, David, what do you have for us with your correspondence?
Oh, I have a letter that I want to share with you from a lovely reader who is very critical of my work. And we have occasional little back and forth. And she liked the column I wrote last week about visiting the grandkids and trying to persuade them to be U of A kids. And she wrote me a note right after that one saying, I guess you're not a commie. We just have strong differences of opinion. The U of A-ASU rivalry seems to go beyond a rivalry. I don't share that history. I keep wishing I could find someone to discuss politics with, because I simply cannot understand where the other side is coming from, and the other side cannot understand where I'm coming from. I've tried with some girlfriends, and we just agree we don't talk about it. For me, it's about policies, not personalities. I'm very conservative, but I think the government should stay the hell out of everything. Anyway, I think you're quite a pleasant person, and your writing is outstanding. I enjoy sparring with you. I've tried not to listen to too much cable news, because all of it pisses me off.
Pisses me off, too.
I think both sides have lost their minds. I look forward to more of your articles. This one hit home.
Mm.
We're lovers now.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
U of A brings lovers together.
Yeah. Yeah. That was perhaps the most reasonable letter I've ever received from a Trump supporter from the back and forth. Yeah.
I share her disdain for cable news. I think that both sides, if you watch, it's hard to come home with anything, number one, positive that happened during a day.
Yeah.
And number two, with anything accurate. A lot of times they just let the talking heads kind of take over, and you get this – warped perception of what the policy that she's looking for, what it might actually be. And so that's where I can see like that whole personality, policy over personality. I can see that criticism.
I'm sure it's generational too. The poor woman's probably from the generation that reads. What the?
Who does that?
Who does that?
Crazy.
So weird.
Words.
Yeah.
Video. That's where it's at, baby.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of video, you did a quick video about scooting.
Oh, the scooters are here, folks. They are dropping today, and we're recording this
hopefully
on Thursday.
Not dropping.
Yeah. Not dropping. I think that as much as I love riding these things around, I mean, I love it. I think it's going to be a disaster. I just do not see this ending well in Tucson. I see it probably ending before the 6-month pilot is up.
Do you think that we are more or less coordinated than other communities?
I don't think that. Well, perhaps our streets are. I think that in the areas that these would be used in high density areas, i.e. downtown 4th Avenue, that the current infrastructure, the roads, the trolley or the streetcar that runs through it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really allow for the space for these things to work. In a safe way, at least, I believe. If you bring them on the sidewalks are usually used in this town by folks.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you start getting these things outside of those areas where there is density, you start running into problems where are these streets paved well enough? Is there enough space on the street? If you can't ride on the street, are there even sidewalks in that area of town for you to ride on? To me, these are the sort of things that work very well in areas with high tourism rates and a little bit higher density than we have in Tucson and with better paved streets.
It's a well-intentioned concept.
It is.
It's kind of an attempt to engineer our behavior.
Yeah.
You know, to be conscious about climate.
To scale down our use of transportation to a human scale instead of these big things.
But how big? Have you ridden one?
Oh, many.
How big are the tires? My concern is always, I remember when I would ride my kids' scooters, I hit a bumper. I'm down.
The tires on these things are, number one, on the Razor scooters, they're almost like bike tires. They're a little bit bigger scooter. You can actually sit on those ones.
Oh.
On the Bird scooters, they're like the scooters you were talking about. But the wheels themselves are pretty tough. But if you hit a big enough rock or a big enough crack in the road with either of these two, you're either going to the side or you're going to be eating your teeth.
I assume. Is that a concern?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. If I'm riding them in Tucson, I will be riding with a helmet that they provided me with. I'm Mr. Safety when it comes to that sort of thing.
I think that's your new nickname.
Mr. Safety.
All right.
Speedy delivery.
Good old Mr. So with that, David, you have something coming up, right?
I got two things coming up.
It will be in France.
I've got a gallery show. My work is at the Contreras Gallery, and it'll be up until Saturday, September 29th. So check out my cartoons at the Contreras Gallery downtown. And also in October, I am producing a fundraiser for Making Strides Against Breast Cancer, which is born out of another thing, a fundraiser called Thanks for the Memories, which the ladies really seem to enjoy. October 16th, you can only get the tickets online. Look for the promotions on Facebook. And our headliner is from New York City. Her name is Lori Brownstone. She is so funny, and I did not remember her because I wrote her a thank you note for flying to Tucson to do this show in October. And she said, "You don't remember me, do you?"
Ooh.
And I said, Lori, no. I worked at the Citizen for many years. I said, "Oh my gosh, you're Mrs. Meisel." And she is.
Wow.
She's a big star in Greenwich Village and Manhattan. I Facebooked her, and she's all over the place on the island. So.
If you can make it there.
You can make it just about anywhere. Oh, except at the Citizen.
Aren't you going to France, too?
I'm going to France.
Isn't that for, like...
a couple weeks.
Drawing?
Yeah. Drawing cartoons. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. French government's inviting me. Just don't tell anybody I dribble Hammond, okay? It was just a cartoon. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to our varied conversations today. If you want to reach us, please send a letter to the editor at tucson.com/opinion, or you can reach me individually at sgassen@tucson.com. That's sgassen@tucson.com.
And you can reach me at ecelaya, that's ecelaya, at tucson.com.
And my email rhymes with lunar. Tuner, T-O-O-N-E-R, at tucson.com.
So we want to remind you that our opinions belong to us and are not necessarily those of Lee Enterprises. And thanks for being with us. We will talk to you real soon.
Thanks again, folks.
And adios.
Thank you.